Good afternoon. Welcome, everyone. We are going to get started. My name is Jalika Morris, and I'm the Senior Stock Plan Administrator for Yahoo and the co-chair for the Yahoo Black Network, representing the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and I will be your session MC for today's session. I am thrilled to be here in support of the advancement of women leaders from across the state and in support of this community. I am also very proud to represent Yahoo's Office of Inclusion and Diversity as it helps focus, galvanize, and align our efforts to increase diversity across the entire corporate community, the workforce, the workplace, and the marketplace. The Office of Inclusion and Diversity has also given platforms for employee resource groups to develop, as I proudly represent Yahoo's Black Network. For all of these reasons, the Watermark Conference for Women is relevant, appreciated, and embraced by all women of all colors. Before we start, can I please get each of you to give yourselves a round of applause? Woo. Very good. Self-appreciation is invaluable. The Conference for Women offers a blend of practical tools and advice and inspiration, peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we're committed to your empowerment to inspire you to make your mark in and for your companies, your careers, and your communities. Thank you for participating in the breakout session, Think Differently, Feeling Confident About Taking the Lesser Known Path. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and I am excited to introduce Nora Poggi. Nora is a French journalist and filmmaker directing her debut film, She Started It. She has interviewed key players in Silicon Valley for the past 4 years for publications including The Examiner.com, The Usine Nouvelle, I'm sure I mispronounced that. She previously worked at French social network Viadio.com and award-winning production company Lucky Dragon Productions. She is a TEDx speaker and has been featured in Inc., Forbes, Fast Company, Glamour, Huffington Post, and others. Everyone, please give Nora a round of applause.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you all for being here. Very excited to have you all. It's pretty awesome to see this room full of young women. Thank you, Watermark. So we have, you know, the task of talking about Think Differently. What does that, you know, really mean? A lot of different things. I would like to know here, all of you are in high school, I'm guessing, that's what I heard. Who here has the...
Not everybody. Mentally.
Yeah. not you. Those two are gonna give you, you know, a really treat for the next hour. You're gonna see awesome personalities, Lovey and Purnima. So who here has had the desire, or who has, you know, inspired to build something like a company, or raise your hands, whoever is an inspiring entrepreneur. That's really awesome. Okay, so we have a lot of people here who are already on that path. We're gonna jump into the panel really quickly. The main thing that we're gonna figure out is how do you kind of get back up after a failure to create your own path. One quote that I really love, which is from Nicole Sanchez, she's the VP of Social Impact at GitHub. She says that, you know, study really shows that young women in particular are very, very scared of failure. And that's because, you know, we're kind of being taught that way. We're being raised that way, conditioned that failing is the ultimate, you know, ultimate bad thing that can happen to you in life. And the truth is, especially here in Silicon Valley, it's not the same for boys. When you go to school and you get a bad grade, and that's what Nicole Sanchez explains, girls will give up after a bad grade, especially it's math, science, all of that. They will say, you know what, that was not for me. The boys will keep going, and they become, you know, the Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates of Silicon Valley. So we're here to talk about how to build the next generation. You all are here to be that next voice. So we're gonna kick it off with Purnima and Lovey, who are both women I deeply admire. So I'm like really excited to be here. I like literally stalk them on social media. So They're going to introduce themselves, but really quickly, Lovie is an award-winning author. Yes, her book, I'm Judging You, is like a New York Times bestseller. Purnima was the founding engineer at Mint.com, the financial company, and she has created her own new nonprofit/company. Is it a nonprofit?
No, it's for-profit. So
actually, for-profit.
You like so making money?
Yeah.
Femgineer. So okay. She's like a, you know, kick-ass, can you say that? Women in tech. So you're like in really good company. Let's get started with these women. Give them, please, a big round of applause.
I feel like this table needs to be moved a little bit because I don't get to see you guys.
It's a good idea.
Hold on. Because I was like, half the room was cut off.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Let's move.
Yes.
So much better. See, that's what you mean. Think differently. Right there. So we're going to start with just, if you want to say just really quickly kind of who you are before we jump into questions.
I'm a writer, a digital strategist, speaker, professional troublemaker. I essentially get paid to be myself.
Okay.
And I wrote my first book that came out September 13th, and it's called I'm Judging You, the Do Better Manual.
Yeah.
And it's a collection of essays on life, culture, social media, and fame, and why we all need to do better. So, and I also have a nonprofit called the Red Pump Project. It's a national nonprofit that raises awareness about the impact of HIV and AIDS on women and girls. And we use red shoes as a conversation starter. And yeah, so that's the Cliff Notes version.
Nice, thank you.
Hi, I'm Purnima. I was a software engineer. I don't write as much code anymore, so I won't pretend to be a software engineer. And transitioned from being an engineer into an entrepreneur a few years ago. I'm also a blogger and obviously a speaker. And as mentioned earlier, my company is called Femgineer. It's an education company. And our goal is to help techies build products and companies. We primarily work with women who are mid-career, so those who are a couple years out of school and they feel like now is the time to start something, or they want to level up in their career and want to become leaders. So we primarily focus on online education around entrepreneurship and leadership. And I'm happy to be here to talk to all of you.
Yay. So our first question is around kind of the turning point. If you have kind of a story you can tell us about, when was the moment where you kind of decided, I'm just going to do it my own way? Like, this is it. I'm building my own stuff now. Who wants to get started?
So I've
Which
been
time?
I feel like there are multiple.
I've been blogging for 14 years. I started my blog when I was in college in 2003. I was peer pressured into doing it by my friends. And back then it was called web blogging and nobody was making money from it. So I was just doing it just because I was like, this is cool. I like to write. You know, I'll talk about my random college life. Graduated from college in 2006. Deleted that blog and started what is now awesomelylovey.com. And instead of talking about my random life, because at that point I didn't have a job, having just graduated, I was talking about pop culture, television, any type of thing I wanted to talk about the world. But then I had a full-time job, so I would go to work from 9 to 5 and come home and blog from like 7 to 9. And over the years, my blog started getting way more attention, and I won my first award for it. It was the Best Humor Blog Award in 2009. In April 2010, I got laid off my job. Mind you, my bosses knew about my blog, but that's not why I got laid. I got laid off because budget cuts. And I was like, oh, shoot. It was basically the universe pushing me to take the leap of faith I wasn't going to take myself. So when I lost this job, I was like, but I need benefits, and like, how am I going to keep up my shoe vice? So I kept on looking for other jobs, and in marketing, because that's what I was doing. And I kept on looking for other jobs in spite of the fact that I wasn't understanding that what I was kind of being told by God and the universe was like, this writing thing is what you're supposed to be doing. Because I didn't know a lot of writers who were making a good living. So for me, it was one of those things that wasn't possible just because I didn't see it. So I fought it, tooth and nails. I was sending my resume out every week. But I was sustaining, like I was actually making money because doing marketing and what I was doing for my full-time job, I got hired. I basically started a consultancy company. Like people would be like, hey, Lovie, can you help me figure out how to do social media? Cool. So I was making money, but not as much as I was making when I had a full-time job. So like a year later, in like 2011, I finally got hired for a full-time job to be doing social media and marketing for a global brand, right? So good pay. I was like, yes, I'm gonna have benefits again, and yes. I go in the first day, and by 1 p.m., I felt like the walls were closing in on me. Mm-hmm. I went to like slide off my chair onto the floor. I was like, okay, so this office thing is not for me anymore. All right, so I gotta make this writing thing work. And ultimately, I feel like the turning point was every time I would think, okay, I don't know about this blog that I'm doing. I'm not sure if this writing thing is supposed to be what it's supposed to be. I get a note from somebody who says something like, you know, I remember one of the first ones I got from people who read my blog was someone who said she was in the waiting room with her mom as her mom got chemotherapy, and the reason why she wasn't crying was because she was reading my blog and cracking up. And I was like, wow. And then I got somebody else messaged me. It was like the first time she laughed in 6 months after going through a major depressive episode was by reading my blog. So that basically affirmed to me that my words mattered and that it made a difference. So I just kept at it, and then it took on life of its own, and here I am.
That's awesome, really awesome. Yeah, that's a round of applause. What about you, Purnima?
Yeah, so like I said, I feel like there were a couple turning points in my life. The first is probably closest to where all of you are today, which was in college. So I had gone to college with the expectation that I was going to groom myself to be an attorney, and that was kind of my path, and it didn't sit well with me for the longest time. And then my dad had this brilliant idea, who's an engineer. He's like, well, why don't you just take a computer science class and see what that's like? And I was like, it's like the dot-com bubble's going on, because this is back in 2000. So I was like, I don't know if that's a bright idea. He's like, just trust me, you know, that this whole internet thing is going to come back around. So just invest right now. And I was like, okay, if there's one piece of advice I'll take from my dad, it's I'll try this thing. So I did. And the very first class I took, the very first midterm I got a 19. And it wasn't a 19 out of a 19. It wasn't a 19 out of 20. It was a 19 out of 100. And I was like, okay, clearly this isn't, you know, and it wasn't because I didn't study, because I had, you know, been summa cum laude and all that in high school, but just the pressure of being in that midterm surrounded by all these other people, and they're like frantically writing away, and I'm just like, oh my God, what am I doing here, kind of set me back. And so after that, I was like, this isn't for me, but still, something wasn't sitting well, so I thought, okay, look, I'm not a quitter. I'm going to give this another shot. I'm going to take the class again next semester, and I'm going to take it more seriously. And so I showed back up. Now, along this time, the second turning point was, remember I was telling you the dot-com bubble burst, right? So because my dad was an engineer, during college, so I went to Duke University, which is by no means a cheap school, and my freshman year, leading into my second semester, my dad lost his job. And so I was at this crossroads of like, do I continue going to college? Do I continue going to this expensive college? You know, what do I do? And at the time, I thought, okay, maybe I'll just drop out temporarily. And my dad's like, that's not an option. I was like, okay, what are my other options? Well, the option was to stay at the university that I had worked hard to get into and to take out a student loan. And then it became, well, if I'm going to take out this ginormous loan, I got to be able to pay it back. So now I really need a degree that's going to give me a job by the time I graduate. And so I ended up sort of embracing engineering. And I also, you know, fell in love with it. So that was kind of the first two turning points. And then the next turning point came after I joined my first startup. I wasn't the founder. I was the founding engineer. And kind of like yourself, after we got acquired, I was at this crossroads of like, oh, do I go back and work for somebody else? Do I start my own thing? And people were very eager to have me come and work for them. And I got to tell you, it's great when everyone's calling you and offering you a job versus in the beginning of your career when you're just like, somebody give me something, you know? So it can be very, very alluring. And I thought, you know, maybe I should like, Maybe I should just try to start on my own and see where that goes. And a couple people were like, yeah, I mean, why not? And I remember my mom, she was like, well, I mean, like, all these guys have the exact same degree and credentials as you, so I don't know why you wouldn't try. I was like, okay, that's a good point. So I decided to jump right in. And Unfortunately, the second startup that I started was not a colossal success. It was an epic failure. And around that time, I was like, well, do I go back and restart again and come up with another idea, or do I go work for somebody? And I had also started blogging in 2007, so maybe that'll be like a theme here, just start blogging. My blog was called Femgineer, and I was getting a lot of opportunities from it to speak and teach, and I thought, well, what if I just take that blog and try to make it into a business and see if that works? And so that's basically what I've been doing since 2013, and it's, yeah, figured out a way to pay the bills and figured out a way to really retain, like you said, your own self in that process.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. So we want to dive into a little bit of the struggle.
Yeah.
Words.
Yes. So if you can tell us a little bit, like, a really hard time you've had that you can share with the audience, and how did you, from there, kind of get the strength to keep, you know, stay motivated? Like, what did you do? What are the toolbox that you used, you know?
Let's talk money.
Okay.
So when you are in an industry that doesn't have benchmarks, like you're not an accountant, you're not a lawyer, you're not a doctor, like people don't off the jump have numbers in their head for what you're doing is worth. Basically, if you're a creative, you're gonna face the money battles, right? So being a blogger, being a writer, being an influencer, there's no benchmarks for this. As in the money that we were making, there was nothing that was set in stone that was like, all right, starting salary is this. And then you go to this. No. So what happens is when you are writing and you're blogging or you're doing photographer, artist, right? People want to negotiate you down all the time. So let's talk about, in fact, I think people talk very vaguely in terms and like how you make money as a blogger. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's talk about that first. Who cares to find out about that? Okay, I just want to make sure you care about that. All right. So when you make money as a blogger, there's a couple of ways. You can put ads on your website. You can do sponsored posts with brands and companies. You can do social media posts that they sponsor. So these are like kind of like the basic ways. Or you can do like a major campaign with them where you are the talent and they pay you to basically lend your face, your name to this campaign. So back in the day, ads were a big thing that people made money from. Like people were making like $5,000 a month off ads because their traffic was high. But then as more bloggers came on the scene and the internet got older and older, ads started paying people less and less. So people who used to make like $5,000 would be making $500. Huge difference. So part of where the little friction came in is a brand will come to a blogger and say, hey, we want to do a campaign with you, a sponsored post. Because essentially, this blogger is sitting on currency. Your currency, what's worth a lot of money, is your audience. The people who are reading your work, who take in your content, who trust you. So they want to reach those people. So they'd come to me and say like, hey, want to do a campaign with you. So it would be where you write a sponsored post, and then you have three social posts and put it on Facebook, on Twitter. You also then constantly tell people about the brand, right? And I'll be like, cool, what's your budget? And they'll be like, $500. No. In those times, it's hard to walk away from any money, right? Because you're like, should I say no to $500? Because if I say no to this, I'm $500. Like, this $500 I could have in my pocket. But then when you think about it, what they really want you to do is worth like $7,000, $10,000. If you accept the $500, they're gonna come back again with $500 next time. Mm. So for a long time, I was like, why are people not understanding the value of what I'm sitting on? And I had to learn a couple of things. So as women, as girls, we're not empowered to talk money mm-hmm. in a way guys are. And it's something that follows everybody from the time they're young, and it affects how much money we can make in our career. So when you come out of college, the first salary that you're paid affects everything else, because it's a benchmark. So if you already start getting underpaid in the beginning, it means the rest of your career, you're gonna be underpaid. So I wanna encourage everybody in here, all right? The one thing that I wish I had known growing up was that I can negotiate. So if somebody comes to you with a number, and they're like, oh, hey, we want to hire you to do this, or we want to have you be a consultant for this, you have a right to say, that's not enough. Here's how much I want to be paid. Negotiation, you go back and forth. Hopefully you have a middle ground. But if you take nothing away from this, I need you to understand that don't accept the first offer. And how you know that? So sometimes I'll have a conference call with a brand, and they'll be like, okay, this is what we want you to do. This is how much we want you to do it for. This is how long we want you to do it. Okay, so how much will it cost us? And then I drop a number, and they're like, yes, immediately. And I'm like, oh, snap. That means I didn't ask for enough. dang it. Okay. So me having to learn how to get comfortable talking numbers was definitely a struggle. It took a while. And it took me a long time, because what happens when you get underpaid is you feel cheated. Mm-hmm. And that feeling is not a good feeling, and you never want to feel that again. So I just encourage you to be able to talk numbers. And when you drop a number, drop it with an exclamation point. So if somebody says, how much do you want me to pay you for this, right? We have a tendency to say it with a question mark. 5,000? Like, you reply with 5,000? And they're like, are you asking me this question? Whatever number it is that you want, drop it with an exclamation point. 5,000, and say nothing else. Now the ball is in their court to come back and say yes, or that's higher than our budget. And then you ask, well, how much is your budget? How much do you have? They give you that number, and then you figure out yes or no, or say, yes, I can do that, but with less, I'm doing less work for you. Correct?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Taking notes. No, that's super helpful. I actually was like, oh my God, I need to record this and like apply it to my own life. Everybody take notes, this is good advice. Purnima, what is one of the moments that you kind of learned something from you were mentioning your epic failure earlier.
Well, the only thing I will add to what Lovie said is you do not need to justify, because a lot of times people will be like I remember negotiating for my first salary, and I had two offers. One was in North Carolina, one was in California, and many of you don't know, there is a huge difference in terms of living standards. You might be able to get an apartment for $1,000 there, you certainly can't get one here, at least one that you might want to live in.
Right.
So, you know, the lady was kind of, the person on the other end was telling me like, oh, well, what's the other offer? And I was like, that's none of your business, A, and B, it's an apples to oranges comparison. And she was like, what do you mean? What's that, apples to oranges comparison? I'm like, well, that's California. This is California we're talking about, and that's North Carolina. So clearly you're going to have to pay me more for me to move my butt out there. And then the conversation changed. And then when I put my number out, you know, there was still a little like, that's aggressive. And my response was, I'd appreciate it if you could see if it's possible, right? So you don't have to like retaliate or be like, what do you mean that's aggressive? Just drop it with an exclamation mark, and either they're willing to meet you halfway or they're not, but know that there's other game in town. And I think that's the other piece of it, is to have that mentality of, I'm not going to take the first offer, I'm going to wait to see what else there is, but also kind of educating yourself around what is realistic, what's not, I think is really important.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I think, you know, the kind of low points in my life, the most recent low point was around my 30th birthday in 2012, where, the business wasn't going well. And what had happened is we had built a second product where this is kind of the classic scenario where you are well-meaning, like you really mean to do something that's good for the world, and then the world is kind of, you know, smacks you in the face in return. So we had built this product where our plan was to provide small business owners who really struggled to kind of make ends meet with a way to collect money faster. And what ended up happening is we made it super easy for evil trolls to collect money faster. And at the end of the day, when I discovered this, I then not only felt like, wow, I just got sucker punched, but then I also had to come clean. So I had to go to my entire team and tell them, this is what happened. I had to go to all my investors and tell them, this is what happened. And that can be really you know, scary because you think, okay, I'm going to fess up and then everyone is going to punch me again. But actually, what was surprising is everyone was like, thanks for coming clean. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that wasn't really that hard. Like, what other truths can I spout, you know? So that was good. But then it was picking up the pieces, right? It was like, okay, so this thing happened. We are now like in this much debt. How are we going to pay this back? And again, I had to kind of figure out how that was going to happen. And so at that point, kind of to Lovey's point, is it becomes, you become like really worried. You're like, okay, so I messed up this time around. And it's very easy to then say, okay, now what I should do is I should go find that stable job. I should, you know, make back my like savings, and I should, you know, follow the secure path. Because clearly, like, the risk I just took, you know, punched me in the face. But being who I was like, you know what? I'm just going to double down. Yeah. And so at that time, I think I had like, you know, let's just say some amount of savings that was going to get me 6 months down the road. So I was like, I was talking to my boyfriend at the time, now husband. I was like, okay, I'm not going to take money from you. I'm not going to take money from anybody. If I wanted to, they probably would have been kind about it. I was like, I'm just going to try one more experiment over the next 6 months. And if that continues to pan out, I'll do that. And if not, you know what, I'll admit defeat. I'll go back. I'll take the job. I'll build up my savings, and then I'll go back out again. And sure enough, it, you know, I put out Femgineer. I started charging people for the courses that I taught. And not only did I charge, but to Lovey's point, that was not a point where I said, you know what, I'm going to offer discounts. I'm going to slash my prices. I went out and I just did a premium offering. I was like, you know what, guys, it's $1,000. And people looked at me like, $1,000? Like, that's ridiculous. And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't like price this less than $1,000 because I've got staff, I've got to run this, etc. And people showed up, and then it started kind of snowballing, and I felt good at that 6 month mark that I was like, okay, let's see what more I can do, right? So in that time when I kind of hit that low point, and you're going to have this, you're going to have these setbacks that keep coming up. It's not the time to be like, okay, now I need to play it safe. It's the time of what did I learn from my last mistakes that I can apply here, and how do I need to like educate myself so I don't make them again? But you know what? I'm going to take another risk. I'm going to put myself back out there.
Yeah, no, that's very good advice. Mostly around failure, it's difficult to kind of not feel, you know, ashamed or scared, especially when you're a woman, like you said. So it's all about that. And the support network, I think, helps a lot, right? Having people around you who are kind of pushing you again, and whether it's a parent or a husband or whoever.
Yeah, and sometimes it changes. Like, I'll tell you, some people in my family were not too pleased that, you know, I was deciding to start this new venture. They were like, oh, you know, shouldn't you just like call it quits and like get a job and get married and make some babies? And I was like, no, I really don't think I should. I think I should do this other thing. And I think I should also go find some people who are going to support the work that I do want to do.
Yeah, finding the yay-sayers in the room and, you know, run away from the naysayers. Whoever's around you saying, like, you can't do it, just, like, run away. They're not your friend. So now I want to know about, you know, personality traits. You both seem, at least right now, pretty extrovert, pretty confident. What, you know, what can we do when you have a different kind of personality, when you're an introvert? Or what are the things you can do to use your personality to your advantage, to create your own path? Especially, you know, when you're in high school, it's a hard time to kind of figure out, who am I, what am I doing? How does personality kind of play a role in creating that path?
High school is probably the lowest point of my life. it was a really hard time because, you know, one, I was different. I went to a school where there weren't a lot of people that looked like me. Second, we came from a middle-class family, but, you know, like, I didn't have a second TV. I wore one pair of shoes, and I didn't have my own car. And so, you know, some of the other people were like, well, you know, that's a little weird. But I just kind of stuck to my path, and it meant I had fewer friends. It meant I did the things I wanted to do. And it's funny because now, thanks to Facebook, all these people kind of come around and all of a sudden want to be your friend. You're like, well, where were you like 10 years ago, right? So I think you have to stay true to yourself. And yeah, I probably was a little more introverted. I wasn't as involved in like things that other people were involved in, but I also didn't feel like I needed to change. And I think that was also great about high school, is like you can kind of form your own subculture and pursue what you want to, even if that means it goes against the grain a little.
What about you, Lovey? Were you introvert or extrovert? both, or a middle in between?
Extrovert. Well, okay, so first of all, who in this room considers himself an extrovert? And then who are the introverts?
It's pretty split.
Yeah. That's pretty split. Funny enough, your personality can
be both.
You can be
exactly.
both.
Like I said, in between.
But,
I said,
well, see, here's the thing. People have it wrong. Like, you know. Introvert does not mean you're shy. Like, that's not necessarily what it means. And extrovert does not mean you're always the loudest person in the room. So my personality, in terms, I've basically been this person for a long time. It's like, who you're seeing on the stage is who was in high school. Imagine that. Had a ball. So in terms of, I've become more introverted as I grow older, funny enough. And all that means is, after all of this, I'm going to retreat in my room and say nothing to anybody for the rest of the day. And be like, no, I'm not peopling after that. But it means when I'm in front of people, I can also like, hey, what's up? Yeah, in high school, I was this person. Like, I had a very different, I had like four different groups of friends. Like, my student council friends, I was on the basketball team, my other friends who were, did nothing but just like roast each other. So, and in any given time, I was hanging with any group of them, and then maybe it would overlap. Personality absolutely makes a difference in terms of what happens when you're in rooms and how you operate. My writing, like everything about my writing is my personality. So on the cover of my book is this lollipop that's given side eye. This lollipop is basically a candy version of me. Like, I'm the person who's walking around like, God, people gotta do better. Your personality makes everything. So when you're in business for yourself or otherwise, how you relate to people really matters. Because people work and do business with people they like. Remember that. Like, a lot of times, I'm at a conference, I meet somebody who's a PR for a brand, and we have a good conversation, and they're like, oh, let's stay connected. From that conversation, I send them my media kit. From my media kit, they're like, oh, snap. They try to find an excuse to work with me. And I've actually heard this before, where people were like, I didn't even have a campaign that worked for you, but I came up with one so I could work with you. Because they just knew that we were gonna have a good time. I was at, last summer, for example, what brand had me? My Black is Beautiful, which is owned by P&G, hired me to go to the Cincinnati Music Festival to basically just like tweet my good times, right? And while there, we were having such a good time, they were like, what are you doing next week? And I was like, I'm going to the DNC. And they're like, okay, you should do this campaign with us, with Bounty. We could shoot it at the DNC, just like a little workout campaign. Cool. 5 days later, I was doing another campaign with them, literally just because they had a good time at the last one.
So how do you kind of hone in on your strength? Because everybody, you know, there's room for every kind of personality.
Like, there is.
You know, between of introvert, extrovert, anything. There's, you know, a full spectrum of personalities. How can you hone in as an individual, especially when you're in high school, and like what makes up you and your strength and what you should kind of double down on, you know?
Some people here are like super thoughtful. Like, you know, the type of person who will get you a card because they saw you were feeling bad that day. Even that, which is the introvert quality, because introverts really pay attention and hone in on people and focus in and can pick up like feelings, that makes a huge difference. So even if you're not the person who's the funniest person in the room, but you happen to notice that one person was having a bad day, you show up the next day with a card or flowers or candy or something they picked up, that stays with people. So whatever it is that people love about you the most, or whatever that personality trait about you is, you can actually use that in business. So being the person in business, everybody you've worked with, come December, you get them a nice token that's sent to them in their office. And they show up to their office and find body scrubs. And they're like, oh my God, this person's really thoughtful. Anything about your personality that people gravitate towards or say constantly, oh my God, she's really nice. Oh my God, she can dress really well. Oh my goodness, she's a great listener. Use that to your advantage.
That's a great point. Kind of maybe you should, you know, write it down, think about it. What's the main thing that kind of you feel makes up you and makes people kind of relate to you? Do you want to add to that?
Well, I would say a lot of times we tend to gravitate towards what we feel comfortable. So if we feel comfortable being that extrovert and speaking up, awesome, but then when it comes time to like sitting at home or sitting in your office and doing like the hard work, that can be a challenge. Or if you're introverted, then getting up and speaking can be like, oh, I don't like doing it. So I always feel like there needs to be 20% of your time where you're kind of pushing your comfort zone, if not, you know, 100%. Yeah. Because yes, while you have these strengths and you want to keep playing them up, you've still got to explore what are the things that make you cringe. Because a lot of times, what makes you cringe might not even be a personality issue, but it might be the environment that you were in, or maybe the way that you were originally presented. So I had a young woman that I was coaching a few years back who told me, you know, I don't like coding anymore. And I was like, oh, like you don't like the act of sitting at your desk 8 hours a day and writing software or building a product. And she's like, no, I like that. I was like, well, then what don't you like? She's like, I hate my boss. And I was like, oh, well, that's the environment. So let's just change your environment. She was like, well, isn't it going to be like that everywhere?
No.
I was like, no, you got to kind of get out there and talk and see what's out there and also explain to people what you need. And that was a challenge for her because she wasn't used to being that extroverted. But, you know, as she kind of put herself out there, she was like, oh, I didn't realize there was this whole realm of possibility. And now I feel like I can actually do more than I thought I could. So it's always about kind of pushing your comfort zone and not just saying like, oh, well, I'm not good at that. And it's really easy. Like between high school and college, that's the first time we were like, you know what, I'm not good at that. And I remember middle school, I had 30 girls, including myself, in our, algebra class. And by the time I got to my senior year, it was myself and one other girl in our calculus class. And I kind of felt like, where the hell did everybody go? Like, why am I the only one of two people here? But that was where I saw the first drop off, and I was like, well, you know, what's going on? And then again, you know, college and so on. And it's because they would say stuff like, well, I'm just not good at it. I was like, are you kidding me? You were like kicking my butt in eighth grade. So how did you magically, between eighth and ninth grade, all of a sudden kill all your brain cells? You know, did like the lipstick get to your head or something? So it was just funny, but they felt like that wasn't something that was acceptable socially and they needed to change. So be careful about the things that you like to do, the things that you feel uncomfortable, and why it is, you know, you feel that discomfort happen.
So we're going to have one last question before opening up to question. We really want to hear from you and kind of, you know, have an interactive conversation. So my question is kind of actionable items around building confidence. I think it's a major topic. How can we all kind of become more confident, build that? It's kind of really a skill, not something you're born with. What are your tips and tricks?
So there's something called imposter syndrome. Have you ever heard of it? Imposter syndrome is when you're in a room and you feel like you don't belong in there because you're like, oh my goodness, am I wearing a mask? Okay, we have that a lot, that's bad. And you have to talk yourself out of it. A couple of very practical things. A lot of rooms that you'll be in, there'll be people in there who are less gifted and less talented and less smart than you. And they think they belong there. And because they think they belong there, they belong there. So who are you not to think you belong there? Like, you're the person who walked in with an amazing GPA, you have all these great extracurricular activities, you've gotten to your favorite college, like you walk in that room with the power that you've earned. And a lot of times, again, as girls, as women, we're not encouraged to walk with this power because they want us to be like the humble ones. Oh my God, no, I just did that, no, whatever, it's whatever. No, it's not, you did that. And it was awesome, okay? And like, I want you to stand in the fact that it was awesome that you did that. So just being able to understand that imposter syndrome, honestly, the only purpose it has is to make you feel bad about yourself. So that's one. And two, just knowing that, like, boys walk in rooms confident no matter what they bring in there. They don't even have the right to half the time. You're like, dude, you don't even have a great GPA. You're like, ah, totally gonna apply for that job in that college, no, whatever, I'm gonna get it. Walk in there like a boy then. Like, walk in there like as if this room was yours. And who's gonna tell you any different? Honestly, it's just really important for you to just start owning your power now. Now. Like when somebody asks you like, oh, what do you do? Who are you? Again, don't answer people with exclamation points. I mean, with question marks. I want you to constantly do the exclamation point thing. Like, this, who am I? My name is, no. My name is Lovey. Period. Okay, there's no question mark there. I'm very sure of that. You should be too, and you have the right to be because you're amazing. So I just really want people to carry that with them. It's gonna be very important when you're in college especially and you're in this like huge place. I went to a college with 40,000 people. And you walk in there and you're like, oh gosh, was I supposed to be here? Yes, the fact that you're there means you're supposed to be there. The fact that you're in this room means you're supposed to be in this room. There's no imposter syndrome here. Like, you deserve all the good things you get. Don't question that. And I feel like sometimes we get in those little whirlwind things where it's like, did I really deserve that? When I hit the New York Times bestselling list in September, I had like a mini imposter syndrome moment where I was like, oh my God, number 5? How did I do that? Because you've been working hard, like, that's why. So you just have to like talk yourself out of it. There'll be moments when you'll be like, okay, did I deserve this? Ask yourself the question, did I work hard for it? If your answer is yes, then absolutely you deserved it.
Yeah.
Fine, even if you didn't work hard for it, did you get it? Cool, because some boys are getting stuff that they didn't work hard for. So who are you not to, okay?
Nice. So, and then think about your questions now.
Well, they can start lining up, so by the time we finish, yeah, we can start.
You can start lining up.
Yeah. So I think this is a very, you know, funny thing because I actually don't feel like I had a lot of confidence growing up, and I still just would do stuff, right? Because I was curious. So I don't think you have to feel like you're ready or feel like you're, you know, a badass or anything before you sign up. You should start with, I'm curious about this thing, and there's going to be a really steep learning curve, right? Just like I told you about computer science. Like, I wasn't confident. I got that 19. I still walked back in there. So you don't even have to have confidence. All you need to do is be like, okay, I'm interested. I'm going to show up. And part of it is because you don't actually develop the confidence until you get some small wins, right? So until you kind of make a small success, or somebody says something like, oh, that was great, or maybe they say something terrible, right? And you're like, well, you know what? I'm just learning. I'm still learning. So it doesn't matter, but have that curiosity. And that's more valuable because the confidence is going to kind of wane. If you don't sleep enough, you're not going to be confident. If you don't, you know, do your power posing, you're not going to feel confident. But if you instead say, you know what? I'm just going to show up. I'm going to try my best. And that's all I can expect of myself and others can expect of me. Great. But I think the minute that we expect or try to, you know, exude it, then it puts us in this corner.
Yeah, for sure.
And the last thing I'll say about confidence is when you do start to, you know, exhibit confidence, then people think that you're intimidating. And this is why I struggled in high school, because all the boys thought I was intimidating, even though, look at me, like, maybe I was like 10 pounds lighter, but I'm pretty much the same person. And I was like, how could I be intimidating as this like small person? They're like, I don't know, you just make them feel less of themselves. And I couldn't stop that. I wasn't gonna stop raising my hand and answering questions in class. I wasn't gonna stop being who I was. I wasn't going to somehow say like, oh, well, I'm not gonna be confident because it makes you feel like you're less of a person. You just need to work on your confidence, right? So keep that in mind, because there will be people at every time who will try to undercut you, who will try to say you can't do it, who will think you aren't good enough. And that tape recorder, if you don't learn to like eject it, will become part of how you speak to yourself. And that's when the drop-off happens. So keep that in mind. And if you already have that confidence, embrace it and just go for it.
And can I say that, like, what other people think about you is none of your business? As in, like, when you are being your true self, what random people think about you is not your business. In that if you are walking tall and somebody somehow is intimidated by the fact that you're walking tall, that has nothing to do with you. So don't try to minimize that. And again, it's actually very important to talk about the boys and how that impacts a lot of our development. A lot of times women, and this grown people do this, so it's not just teenagers that do this. Because of how men are taking their like confidence or however they're walking in a room, they tend to want to reduce themselves to be like a bit more palatable. Here's the thing, everyone's not gonna like you. That's perfectly fine. Like, never expect everybody to like you. It's just not possible. So the only thing you can do is just to be yourself, and then how it lands is how it lands. Because the people who are gonna like you, gonna like you anyway. And the ones who don't are not gonna like you even if you are the perfect person. So might as well just like Don't worry yourself about that. And just like be the best version of you. Hang out with people who make you happy. Okay, because you surround yourself with people who are like, yo, that was dope. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's not dope, they can also tell you that was terrible. Surround yourself with people who you love, who infuse power into you, because this whole confidence thing is not just you in a vacuum in an island. I'm surrounded by people who constantly tell me the truth, like good or bad.
But you know they love you and support you.
But you know they love. I know they love me. I know they come with great motive. So it's one of those things.
Yeah, thank you.
We still have time.
You guys enjoy the session? Yeah, right, it's really informative. Thank you to the panel. Now, this is the time to exercise your confidence. We are opening up the mics to ask some questions. We only have a little bit of time. I think, are you coming to a mic? Perfect, you can come right around the front. Just come on down.
Yes, ladies.
Woo!
All right.
So I know you guys were talking about how sort of the universe showed you signs to take that leap of faith. But what if there are no signs? And like, how do you go about doing that yourself?
You don't need signs.
You don't need signs.
Remember, I told you the second time around, all the signs were like, you gotta stop doing this because you just don't know what the hell you're doing. Clearly. So you don't need signs. And this is where I said, like, it's really got to be about the curiosity. It's got to be about what do you want to get out of the experience. And if you fall flat, you fall flat. But hey, you're young. You're going to pick yourself back. It doesn't even matter if you're not young. Just keep doing it, right? I think that's the thing. You've got to have that drive in you.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, real quick.
Okay. So it's sort of unrelated, but so I had this friend in my school. And
that mic isn't on.
It's not on? I thought it's really low.
Is it?
No, it's not on. But ask a question.
Okay. So I had this friend in my school, and we have a tech club, and she was interested in it, but she thought it wasn't the cool thing to do.
It's not.
And so how do you go about like talking to people that are interested in something and you really want to support them because you know they're your friends and this could be something that turns into like a lifelong passion for them? So how do you what do you say to those people to tell them that, you know, it's important to follow their passion even if they don't think that the people around them think it's the cool thing for them?
Yeah, I mean, coolness has I've never been that cool to begin with. And on top of that, I was like, you know what, I'm never going to be cool, so I might as well just do what I love doing, and that way, at the end of the day, at least I'm happy, right? I think once you kind of go down this path of, like, what's cool and what's not, and I've seen those people that were really cool in high school, and let me tell you, some of them aren't even alive right now, which is unfortunate, because I'm only in my 30s, so you got to be really, really wary about that, and, again, do the things that you...
Cool is overrated.
Yeah.
Man. When you grow,
so
nobody cares about cool. And also all the stuff that wasn't cool in high school, all the kids who weren't cool are now the ones running the world.
Yeah.
So who cares about cool? Just be like, just do it if you feel like doing it. Cool is so subjective. One thing is cool one time, and then tomorrow it's not cool anymore. So who can keep up with that?
Yeah.
I don't even do trends because I'm like, I don't dress myself based on trends because I'm like, I don't do the cool thing. I've had the same clothes, like, I mean, I can... take stuff in my closet from high school and still wear it today because I've always been like, I'm going to do classic. Whatever I feel like wearing, I'm going to wear it. Don't follow trends and cool. That's just a waste of time.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry. We're going to go like crisscross.
Oh, sorry. I didn't see that.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. I have a question about negotiation. Do you negotiate differently if you don't have that second job offer?
It doesn't matter what is or isn't on the table.
No.
I think you can certainly leverage it in a way where you can say, hey, I've got other stuff, but you don't need to say that what it is specifically. Like, you don't need to say it's 10K more or 5K or 5% or whatever. You can use it to add a little leverage, but you need to figure out what you truly want and make sure people can give that to you or work with them to achieve as close to what you want as possible.
And every job that you're negotiating for can be in a silo. So it's not like... they're not expecting you to already come to the table with a second offer, right? But even that second offer has nothing to do with what you want right now. Like, again, like she said, you play them against each other if they exist. Some people make up a second offer and be like, well, I have this other job. They don't. But you don't need a second offer.
Yeah. And when you negotiate, people take you more seriously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question kind of similar to hers. When you want to negotiate, how do you know what to, like, what offer to give? Like, how do you know how much you're worth or what the position you're doing is worth?
Research. So doing, and you got to be careful though, because you don't want to just ask your inner circle, because a lot of times your inner circle may be underpaid. So you got to be careful about that, right? So it's better to actually sometimes aim for people, like I call this, find your big brother, big sister. Who are the people like you want to be in the next 5 years? What did it take for them to get there? How much money are they making in that position? And then look for kind of the range of what's acceptable in the position that you are now going after. But yeah, you don't have to feel like, oh, okay, well, Bob's making, you know, 5,000 more, so maybe I should just ask for 5,000 more. You know, maybe Bob's being underpaid. Maybe he should be making 15,000 more, right? So
go to salary.com. You can look up numbers there. For jobs like mine that don't really have anything published, I just let people know what they shouldn't accept. Like, I tell anybody who's been blogging for over 5 years, you should definitely not be accepting less than $500 for a sponsored post. Like, if somebody tries to bring that to you, just be like, absolutely not. So everyone's ranges are different based on, like, my audience is also huge. So what I charge would be completely different from somebody else who does the exact same thing I do. And also, name prestige, then you add that on top of it. So for non-traditional jobs, like accountant, it's really hard. But again, it comes down to talking to people. So I'll send my media kit to my friends, and they'll be like, double your rates. And I'm like, oh, snap. All right, cool. And the moment I did that, nobody balked. I was like, snap, I should have been asking about this the whole time. So having a network of like-minded people in the same industry comes in handy.
So if that boss, say, tells you, like, oh, you're not worth that much, or is there anything you can say, or, like, do you just give up there, or, like, you don't keep negotiating?
Is it a budget thing? Is it somebody on your team is getting paid the same thing, and you're like, I'm asking to actually match them, that they can't balk back? So if you give them something that they can't say no to, like give people offers that they can't refuse. So it's like, okay, I know somebody on my team who's doing the exact same thing I'm doing is making $10,000 more than I am. They have no reason to say no to you.
Okay. Back it up with research facts. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
Come
you.
With receipts.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kat, and I want to be a talk show host.
Ooh, hey.
And so, like both of you, you guys are bloggers, and so instead of like typing it up, I just say it in front of the camera. So how did you guys build your audience?
Okay, so I built my audience by, one, being an early adopter of all the social networks. So I've been on Facebook since July 2004. Facebook started in February 2004.
Yeah.
I've been on Twitter since 2008. Outside of that, the best way to build your content is by building your audience is by creating dope content, like content that people want to share. So my work, I'll drop a blog post today and walk away from Facebook and come back 3 hours later to 2,000 shares of my blog. So then people who've never seen or even know who I am are like, oh my God, who is this? They click on it, then they end up subscribing because they love what they read. So you want content that's really good. I do video blogs sometimes too, like on Facebook Live. I do a lot of press stuff. So being able to also give people big information in small bites. You want to do a talk show host, you should definitely have a web series. You should definitely have a web series, because then that's your resume. That's what people can look at and say, oh, snap, I love how she is. I love how she gives ideas. She's great on camera. Let me give her a show. Honestly, you should definitely start a web series.
Yeah. The only other thing I would add to that is, you know, your audiences will change over time. So when I first started, I didn't think anyone was reading what I wrote. I was just writing it for myself. And then it was coming to conferences like this and seeing that people were interested and also kind of hearing them say stuff back at me, but then engaging and understanding what else they wanted. And then the next piece is like really being consistent. Like when you work for yourself, you've got to be disciplined.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you don't do the work, you're not going to get fed, right? So getting comfortable with being consistent and listening to your audience.
Hi, my name is Jocelyn. And I really was inspired by you guys talking about blogging. That's something that I've been wanting to do for a while and like start a brand and name. My question would be to, how do you go about networking and making connections and making sure you're getting into the industry and getting your name out there?
In-person stuff is good. But also, so in person, I make sure that you will remember me when you walk out the room. How I do that is a couple of things. How I dress. No matter what conference I go to, it might be a tech conference with nothing but dude bros. It might be a conference that's like, or at a church like yesterday. I walk in that room and I want to have on something that you're going to remember me by. So the color red is my signature. I always have on something red. If not red on me, I have red lipstick on. I wear a judgy pin. The times when I don't wear red, people actually pointed out that I'm not wearing red, right? That's one. So something, have a signature. It might be big hair. It might be the fact that one of my friends has like 60 pairs of glasses, so her glasses are always jazzy. So I'm always like, oh, let's see what frame she got on today. So whatever your signature is, that one thing that you love, you do that all the time, like most of the time. And then two, I don't carry business cards anymore. And I made a very deliberate choice to not carry business cards, because you go to a conference, you end up with 500 business cards.
You don't know what to
do. And you're just like, I don't know who any of these people are. If I'm standing in front of somebody and they're like, oh my God, I want to reach out to you. One, I say I'm the most findable person on the internet. I'm lovey everywhere. L-U-V-V-I-E is my username on all social networks. But two, if we really care, we switch phones and put our contact info in there. So I no longer carry business cards. I'm like, if you want to reach out to me, here, give me your phone. You take mine. Here's my email. Easy contact. Boom, done. I made the work easy for you. So be memorable. Walk in a room and be memorable. Do something. Wear something. I always have on shoes that are interesting. So even when I'm not wearing red, I have on like silver Oxfords, gold ones. So there are people who are like, oh my God, I remember you by your shoes. Folks want something that's going to have them remember you by, especially in a giant conference with 40,000 people. What is it that you're going to walk away with that's going to be like, ah, even if it's a pin, go find an interesting pin that says something that you wanted to say, and people will remember that.
I'm so sorry I asked for the confidence, but you guys gave me a lot of confidence. We are getting kicked out.
Oh, okay.
So if you can, I know Lovey gave her the handle, but social media, just ask the questions on the side, but we do have to leave out the room. Thank you guys
and
for joining.
My book is in the bookstore. They're all signed, so yes. You guys can go get them.
Yes, please go get the book. It's a great body of work. I read it.
And if you have any other questions, feel free to email me. Again, my inbox is like, I'm easy to find, so email me.